Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast for the week of February 12th. I'm your host, William Liu. Hopefully the third time is the charm. And there's too much good Raptors basketball to not be discussed. And bring in the big dog, Blake Murphy. Honestly, Blake, it just flows off the tongue to call you the big dog.
All right, man. I shot it down and take number two, but here we are, the big dog. Raptors Twitter is my yard, you know. All right.
That's correct. And you are a dog enthusiast.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a new subletter, and she has a service dog in training, which has been fun.
There you go. That's, honestly, is that how you look for roommates?
No, not necessarily. Because if they don't have one, I'll just foster a new one.
That's true. Good on you, Blake.
Yeah. What's going on, man? How was your vacation?
Vacation was great. Much needed. I'm really upset that I missed the Boston Celtics game because of all the slander that went on.
However, look at the opportunity you had today.
Exactly, man. I mean, let's just start there. Before we get to, look, listen, the Raptors winning like five straight games, beating opponents by like 20, 30 points, you know, the starters never having to play ever. That's all well and good, but let's just out top take some time to slander the Celtics. Blake, let me ask you: can Paul Pierce's jersey retirement, which is not even that important, could this have gone any worse from where it started? here's the announcement for the season: Paul Pierce is retiring as a Celtic, and he's gonna have his jersey retired. From that moment on to now, where they're getting crushed by the Cavaliers. And everyone has to sit around and wait for post game. It's just great, man. Paul Pierce's slander is delicious.
Yeah, I think it's very fitting that the Celtics got exposed as overrated on the same day Paul Pierce's overrated ass was getting his jersey retired.
Oh, man. Listen.
I do have... Can I share one problem I have with the Paul Pierce slander?
Okay.
I feel weird joining in because he did absolutely own the Raptors.
Look, listen, just because he kicked Chris Bosh in the penis, like, in 2008,
man,
doesn't mean we can't slander him now.
This dude carried two flip phones with him at all times, took a picture of an emoji to post online, and still had memes ready to dunk on the Raptors.
Honestly, Paul Pierce thinks a screenshot is when one phone takes a picture of another phone, okay?
And he still had memes on deck for the Raptors.
He really did.
I don't know if the Raptors will ever, like, short of going to the finals, maybe even winning a championship. Honestly, I think they have to beat Washington at some point to wash that out of the memory.
Yeah. Well, that's because we probably won't face Brooklyn anytime soon.
Yeah. And there's also the Wizards fans still really hang on to that sweep. We could do a whole podcast on Wizards slander, too, right now. Derrick Rose is going to save their season.
Oh, buddy, listen. They have no John Wall. Thomas Satoransky is hurt. I think Tim Frazier like hurt his face or something.
Tim Frazier is going under surgery, and they're hoping he can play this week, but they won't know until after surgery.
He needs to have facial reconstruction surgery, so it doesn't look like Westbrook's son. And you know, I mean, who do they have? They're gonna have Derrick Rose. I can't wait for Derrick Rose to take shots away from Bradley Beal. Honestly, the whole franchise is hilarious. They haven't won 50 games since Wes Unseld was around. Like, Wes Unseld? No one even knows who that looks like.
Yeah. But hey, they swept the Raptors one time, so that's... You know, the Raptors have some sad franchise-defining moments, but sweeping the Raptors is a really sad franchise-defining moment.
Yo, listen, I have a dark memory of riding the GO bus. There's like a GO bus that goes from Toronto to Hamilton that is like 40 minutes and it's like very smooth. And I used to take that all the time for work when I was at university. And like the last bus is at like 12:40. So after that, you have to take this longer bus that's not the express bus that takes pretty much like 2.5 hours to go from Toronto to Hamilton because it stops in like, you know, Mississauga, Oakville, Burlington, you know, whatever. And
I
was riding that. Yeah. Okay. All right. But then. I was like 2 a.m. I was riding that shit, and then I was on that bus. That was after game 3 of that series, where I was like, man, we got nothing. Because, you know, as it turns out, starting Tyler Hansbrough is not going to cut it.
No.
But we should have started James Johnson, Blake. If we started James Johnson, we would have won.
At least Landry Fields.
Oh, God. Honestly, yeah, Landry Fields for those 7 minutes against Joe Johnson in 2014 playoffs was was a great time. But you know, wait, Blake, hold on. How does slandering the Wizards and Celtics turn into slandering the Raptors?
I don't know, man. I'm ready. Not that any Celtics or Wizards fans are going to listen to this, but like, I feel it's important to acknowledge your own slander-worthy shortcomings before you get really into slandering the tryhards and the Afflecks and the we're going to dap up Red Auerbach for Black History Month ass.
Boston PD.
Sorry, it wasn't the Celtics, but it was the Celtics.
It was the Celtics. Come on, that's who Celtics fans are. No, but I mean, look, the Celtics are in a free fall right now. The Raptors have taken over first place, rightfully.
8-10 in their last 18 now.
Something like that. Yeah. I mean, look, it just hasn't gone well for them. Like, their offense is in the tank because Jason Tatum is no longer shooting like he's KD, and now he's shooting like he's Jeff Green, which is what he is. Jaylen Brown has been Jeff Green for like a couple months now.
That's good though. They have two guys on the roster better than Paul Pierce.
Oh, of course. Listen,
Paul Pierce is also Jeff Green.
Paul Pierce is just Jeff Green with a healthy heart. But the Paul Pierce is X player with X is so good.
Yeah.
like my guy Will, who I work with at the store, he said Paul Pierce's what did he say? Paul Pierce's Danny Granger was with bullet wounds or with stab wounds. like man.
Oh man.
The Joe Johnson with a resume, like there's so much, man.
Johnson made the All-Star team 7 times.
Yeah, how many times did Paul Pierce make the All-Star team? Because I have an issue with that. He was not an All-Star for that long.
Yeah, he actually, like, it's interesting. Slander aside, he really didn't have that impressive of a
no.
And look, pre-Big 3, I was actually a really big Paul Pierce fan.
Yes.
And I guess some of this is colored by the fact that, like, efficiency matters so much more now than it did even like 10 years ago, to where the way Pierce was getting points up and his function in the offense was really valued at that time. So he probably looked a lot better at that time, but in retrospect, obviously he was part of a championship team, but he was the third best player on that team.
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't know. I think he's probably better than Ray Allen. I thought Paul Pierce's defense was all right.
Yeah, that's
like for
true.
A while, he was pretty good defensively against LeBron. But I mean, like
also Ray Allen not showing up to the jersey retirement and posting a photo of him golfing instead.
Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing: Ray Allen wasn't even golfing. That's an old picture.
Oh, was
it? I can swear that's an old picture. No, I don't think that's been proven. But
okay.
I'm convinced that's an old picture. I think Ray Allen was just at home, you know.
Yeah, because it went up this
successfully DMing girls.
Yeah, it went up this afternoon. Shortly before that game started. Ray Allen, legs for days.
Yeah, oh, for sure. The guy, he had the calves of a Korean. Honestly, with the Celtics, it's just the whole fan base. Like, that's the creation of the Paul Pierce, legacy, right? Like, Paul Pierce was a good player. He really was, and he deserves to have his jersey retired. It's fine. He's had a lot of longevity. He won a championship. But, I mean, was Paul Pierce ever one of the top 10 players in the NBA at any time?
Maybe on the fringes, but probably not.
I mean, was Paul Pierce better than what DeRozan is currently?
No.
Yeah.
I might go back and look at the numbers after just to make sure that's true. DeMar DeRozan is legitimately playing at, like, he's going to get votes on the back end of MVP ballots. And I know he hasn't shot the ball well the last month or so, but.
Hey, man, he shot the ball well tonight.
He was unbelievable today.
I mean.
25 points on 21 possessions, 8 assists. And he did all of that in, 29 minutes.
The assists of late for DeRozan have been. It's like last year he, made improvements as a creator, out of pick and roll. Now he's legitimately crafty. Like before he was just he's making the right reads, right? So if someone helps on the weak side to tag the roller and there's someone open in the corner, you could pass it to him, right? But he can see that. Now he's did you see him he's throwing those over the shoulder passes?
Oh, that one on the pick and pop with JV for 3?
He did it 3 times today. I mean, that one was the best one. But I mean, what? When's he doing that?
It's great, man.
Yeah. No, DeMar's his improvements are great. Like,
yeah, he's at the 5.2 assists per game now after today too, and that's in like. Not only is that the highest assist total of his career, or assist average of his career by a significant margin, but he's doing it in fewer minutes.
Yeah. So
like, percentage-wise, I think he's up to, like, 25% assist rate, which...
Mm-hmm.
Quite good. Him and JV going from having no chemistry at all for years to, like, just knowing where the other's going to be all the time is really good.
This is more chemistry than Amir and DeMar had. And that's impressive, because Amir and DeMar had some chemistry for a while.
Just not in the 2011 dunk contest.
No. Oh, man. Blake, how's that piece going?
It'll be up sometime this week.
Okay, good. Because I'm dying to read it. Because it's going to be some good stuff
man,
out there.
You want to talk about some slander.
Okay.
I gathered a lot of slander for this piece.
Was there some Serge Ibaka slander?
Yeah, there's slander from and at Serge Ibaka.
Oh, okay. That's good. That's good. Honestly, Ibaka's a tough guy to crack, really. So,
yeah.
Props to you for getting some stuff there.
Yeah, he was pretty funny. I thought it was weird. During the interview, like while I was talking to him about it, I didn't think I was getting good stuff, and then I listened to it back after and was like full on laughing.
That's good.
Yeah, it was.
Not much is mentioned of the fact that Serge Ibaka does like a perfect free throw line dunk.
Yeah. Also,
for a guy who's almost 7 feet, like he's like 6'10"?
6'10", 6'11", yeah.
Yeah, like he does a perfect free throw line dunk. His feet are like fully behind the free throw line.
Yeah, and also that dunk, like the toy was a silly gimmick, but he bit a toy off the rim and still managed to throw down like a dunk that would be good without the toy.
I think that might be better than the Gerald Green cupcake dunk. I love the Gerald Green cupcake dunk.
It's definitely better because one, you have to just like blow on it, and the other, you have to get your teeth and like have the pressure to pull it off and keep it in your mouth. And I think his dunk on the actual dunk was probably better. Gerald Green just did what? He just cocked it back, right?
Yeah, and also like, you know, Gerald Green has like six fingers, so like come on. Yeah.
Gerald Green's sock dunk is still one of the most underrated dunks. I don't think people realize how hard
also,
it would be
like,
to dunk in his socks.
But also like how hard it would be to land in socks. Yeah. Like after trying to do stuff. It's one thing if you're jumping straight up and down. It's another thing when you're trying to do an acrobatic dunk in front of millions, or not, well, I guess in front of thousands of people, millions of people
millions.
Watching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm excited about that piece. It's too bad I couldn't get Blake Griffin for it, because it would have been funny to just, like, read him whatever Anoth said.
Seriously.
Like, everyone's calling your championship a sham.
That was a sham, bro.
I even got to talk to JaVale for it.
That's cool. JaVale seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, do you talk to JaVale about the time he ran back on the wrong way after the Raptors in that Wizards game?
I only talked to him about the dunk contest.
But that was honestly, like, for a while, like, JaVale and Shaqton was like the NBA's best thing for a little bit.
Him and Nick Young being on the same team twice.
Yeah. That's the legacy of Gilbert Arenas, man.
Yeah. Was that the Javaris Crittenden year too?
Maybe.
The whole incident?
Maybe.
Yeah.
That's so wild. But you said earlier about how DeMar DeRozan is averaging all these assists in the fewest minutes of his career. Well, not of his career, but, you know.
For a
long time. I feel like both of that is like a product of the Raptors sort of embracing what they've been wanting to do, and like whatever. We don't have to talk about it that much anymore. It's just pretty apparent on a nightly basis. But with a lot of the minutes has also come down to the fact that the bench has been just incredible, like
stupid good.
I think my theory with it is like they're not as good as this. I mean, obviously they're like the best lineup in the league right now, but part of it is also like, you know, this is February, close to the All-Star break. A lot of teams get, you know, relaxed, whatever. And so a deep team like the Raptors are going to have a natural advantage because of that.
Yeah.
But also just the way the bench plays together as a unit, especially now with CJ Miles like firmly in that unit and not in and out of the lineup. I don't know. There's some of the most cohesive basketball I've seen played in a Raptors uniform. Am I wrong for that?
No, it's great, man. It's to the point where, had you told me at the start of the year the Raptors would play playoff minutes with one of Lowry or DeRozan off the floor, I would have lost it. Now, like, Bobby Webster was on the radio Friday on TSN 1050, I think, And he basically said, you know, it's unconventional, but there's no precedent for it. And he thinks that the guys have earned the chance to maybe see what that looks like in the playoffs. And yeah, maybe you have to adjust quickly. It's probably going to be a short leash if they struggle. But, you know, everyone kind of pencils Lowry and DeRozan in for like 40 minutes in the playoffs. Maybe it's helpful over the long run if that's like 36, 38 minutes and Ibaka's minutes stay down at like 26 instead of jumping up into the 30s. It should still have a short leash because playoff rotations, other teams, you're playing better teams and they're going to tighten their rotations and you're going to be playing against more starters. But I wouldn't be surprised and I wouldn't be entirely against it if Casey continues with the same rotation come playoff time.
Yeah,
which feels crazy to say that you're just going to run an all bench group in a playoff series.
But I mean, like, I don't know. If the opposing team's bench is on the floor, I don't think it's just like the cohesion of it, right? Like when you look at it piece by piece, it doesn't really quite make sense. But it's something that CJ Miles said in the post game, you know, after the Hornets game. He's like, it's just all the skills really complement each other. It's, you know, true. Like every single player on that roster, on that unit complements each other. Like CJ Miles is shooting, and the fact that he's older, right, really does help because since he's older, everyone is already sprinting down the floor. So he's like naturally the trailer. And because people are going so hard towards the basket, it's like easy for him to get open shots in that way. Yeah. It's also like his shooting opens up the floor. The way the specific types of sets they're running, you know, in terms of just like screen action and stuff like that.
Dude,
like
they're having Siakam initiate sometimes in those plays.
Yeah. There was a good post on Reddit NBA the other day about how the Raptors are running a Spanish pick and roll, which is essentially like a pick and roll with like another shooter, sort of screening the guy that's generally the guy who's going the ball,
yeah,
like Pearl.
The screener's man, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like Siakam is the one running that shit. Like,
yeah, I talked to him about it the other night.
Incredible.
So I have it planned for an All-Star break piece, like a video breakdown. Okay. But I talked to him about like running the offense a little bit more and getting into those sets and what they've been doing to prep him for it and stuff. So I'll have to check it out because maybe that'll save me from clipping the videos myself if they've already clipped them.
Yeah, there you go.
So the other thing is, even if... Oh, one thing about the chemistry with those guys, too. Fred VanVleet and DeLon Wright are now regularly throwing passes to each other, but not to the player, to where the player is eventually going to be, where initially when the pass comes off the hands, it's like, where is that going? And then, you know, DeLon Wright just shows up from the baseline in the corner to catch that. Or Fred VanVleet, you know, flares up and it's there. Like, they know where the other one's going to be all the time.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Like, the great thing with watching the young group is that throughout the season, they've just progressively gotten better. Like, each of those players has gotten better throughout the year.
That's
right?
The other thing, too, is maybe they'll be better in April. Not dramatically, but these guys should all be expected to improve.
Yeah. I mean, you look at something like, for example, like, rebounding used to be one of the weaknesses of that roster, and of late, they've been rebounding a lot better. And, you know, you see a guy like, there used to be a thing where like Siakam wasn't really picking his spots well in terms of when he was crashing the boards and when he was helping out on the defensive glass and when he was leaking out. Now he's like always coming in for either a big rebound when necessary, or he's like going down the floor in 4 seconds.
Yeah. And part of that is
I want to see a race of the NBA, like Charles Barkley versus Dick Pavetta style, like, just the fastest players in the NBA.
Siakam keeps trash talking. He wants to race DeMar because DeMar keeps saying Siakam's not fast.
It's not even close. What are you talking about? DeMar is like the slowest player on the Raptors, minus Jonas.
But yeah, in terms of him coming back and crashing, rebounding more, I think a part of that is, you know, obviously he wants to leak out because that's how he gets a lot of his offense. But if you're empowering him to run the floor with the ball off of defensive rebounds and just grab it and push and initiate in semi-transition, then, you know, he knows he's not just feasting on leakouts. He's got other ways to get his points. And I think that's kind of, you know, obviously those sets are still a little clunky sometimes, but it's important development for him, especially if the three-point shot is slow to come along because, you know, you look around at the guys who are kind of these positionless guys and what they do offensively if they can't shoot. And obviously Siakam is not these guys, but, you know, Giannis, Ben Simmons, early career LeBron. Again, Siakam is not those guys, but they were big guys that you wanted on the floor because they have a lot of different skills, and the way you get around them not shooting or not being good spot-up threats is that you put the ball in their hands a little bit more, and you turn a, you know, you turn a ball handler into a spacer like Fred VanVleet, who's, you know, shooting 400% on threes the last month.
Yeah, that's really helped. That's really helped. Even DeLon, even DeLon's like three. Like, I trust him now, you know? Yeah. Like, it's not bad. It's a flat-footed shot, and he takes some time to get it off, but it's been accurate. Pirtle's just been solid all throughout.
DeLon with two blocks today was a lot of fun. DeLon blocking shots is one of my favorite things.
Yeah, especially since, like, the Raptors are very, especially that bench unit, they're really able to turn that stuff into, like, yeah, transition opportunities. And that's the strength, again, of the bench overall. Like, they're so in sync on, like, pretty much everything they do defensively. They're so in sync, right? Like, they know exactly when to switch. They communicate really well. They help each other really well. And it's just, like, a very selfless thing. Like, it's very much just five players working towards a common goal. And it's like, and again, it's, you know, that's the great thing about the bench is it's like you see random players. It's not clear night to night which player is going to go off, but you know, we've seen DeLon have 20 point games. We've seen Siakam have 20 point games. We've seen Pirtle have 20 point games. CJ Miles can get hot anytime. Fred's had 20 point games. Like, you know,
yeah,
on any given night, depending on what happens, like they'll figure out a way to exploit the defense. And sometimes they don't necessarily get it done in the second quarter, but especially in the fourth quarter, it's they're money, man. Like they got a chance to close out the game against the Grizzlies because why not? They're yeah, so good. And, there might be a better shot for him to close out a game than the starters for once. Because the starters closing out games is still kind of an issue. It just can't work on it now because we blow teams out.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that's the one drawback to winning five games in a row by 15 points or more is that, you know, one of the biggest things the Raptors have to work on is late game execution, and there's, you know, I don't know. Do you let a team back in it at some point?
Just for fun? But yeah. But here's the thing. How do you let a team back into it, right? Because we can't even put bad players on the floor.
Honestly, lately the answer is put Bebe out there because Bebe's putting up like a minus 14 in garbage time like every night now.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
He's got Norman Powell-itis.
Yeah. Although even Norm tonight today with OG going down to an ankle sprain, mm-hmm. He was plus 12 with the starters in the third quarter, which is really encouraging to see.
And they held, I think Charlotte had like 11 points in the third quarter there. Like a lot of that was, they put Norm on Kemba Walker. Yeah. And outside of a janky, like, Walker kind of like, not foul baiting, but I didn't think it was a great foul call. Definitely Kemba was looking for the foul. Like,
I'm shocked that you didn't think the call against the Raptors was a good call.
Yeah, listen, this conspiracy, like, I gotta expose the conspiracy. The Raptors only shot 10 free throws tonight, alright?
The one other thing about the bench, even if they don't play a ton together in the playoffs, or they do and it doesn't work and they have to pivot from it, the impact, you know, the last couple of years, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan have been shaky in the playoffs, and some of that is the design of the offense, and some of that is them having to get better, and some of it is that, at least in the case of Lowry, they've entered the playoffs pretty worn down, coming off an injury or having played some of the most minutes in the NBA. That is not the case, and it's been one of the biggest and kind of subtlest parts of this culture reset, is that over the last 10 games, the Raptors are 8-2. Lowry is averaging under 29 minutes, DeRozan's averaging 31, Ibaka's averaging 27, and this is five games in a row now where none of those guys have topped 30 minutes.
Yeah.
That's huge. If the bench doesn't need to play 1 minute together as a 5-7 in the playoffs to have had an impact. If those kind of numbers keep up and Lowry and DeRozan enter the playoffs super fresh and they can get nights off because DeLon can slide into a starting role or Norm can slide into a starting role.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's also been nice that, like, the other starters have been able to pick it up and like, contribute with their offense. Like, of late, it's been JV. JV's been incredible.
He had a great, great third quarter tonight. That, like, Dwight Howard just quit.
JV, I mean, like, okay, first off, the three-pointers, right? Like, the last 12 games, he's, like, taking 1.8 per game and hitting 57% of them.
Yeah.
Now, like, that's not a lot of shots, and he's not guarded a lot on those, but, like, that's wild that he's actually made that development. And, like, they're good-looking shots. They don't look bad, right? And, of course, it's a little bit hot right now, but even if you can work a couple of those in for easy offense, because teams are so used to, you know, sagging off of him and, like, you know, shutting off the paint for when DeRozan drives. Like, you know, that's fine. Just have a couple of those shots. And then, you know, a couple of closeouts happen, like Jarebko in that Jazz game, or who was it? Gortat closed on him in the Wizards game. Like, Gasol closed on him. I mean, I thought he looked better than Marc Gasol. He was doing Marc Gasol stuff.
Yeah. He also gives a lot more fucks than Marc Gasol right now.
Yeah, Mark, honestly, Marc Gasol, listen, you're just collecting checks at this point, man. And I get it, like, you don't want to play with Jarrell Martin and Wayne Selden, but, like, come on, man. You got a reputation to protect, man. Zach Lowe's about to rename the All-Star game, All-Star column for you.
Yeah, Marc Gasol's going to be an entirely different kind of All-Stars soon.
Oh, straight up.
Yeah.
But my point with that was that, like, you know, of late, like, I think part of it is because, you know, Lowry and DeMar, they got into the All-Star game, right? And I'm not saying they only play for these accolades, but of course there are different motivations that happen throughout the year. And now that they've gotten in, they've been a little bit more willing to like share the offense a little bit more, right? And if anyone says like, well, come on, there's no motivations, they motivate every game. It's like, just look at what Lowry did after the starters were announced. Like at that 40-point game against Minnesota and stuff. But,
I will say he was also just like really hot in the Minnesota game and kept shooting and then like had a couple poor shooting nights, so he didn't push it. So like, I get what you're saying, and I get when people pointed out that it looks like he's gunning, but you could also, if you were agnostic to the Raptors side of it, you could look at those same numbers and be like, oh, well, Lowry didn't shoot very much on nights his shot wasn't there, and then he shot a bunch when his shot was dropping.
That's true. That's true. But, which is what you want. Is what you want.
And look, knowing, like, being around Lowry a little bit, I'm fairly certain that he was, yes, he wanted to make sure he got in the All-Star game, but,
yep.
You know what, the other thing is, too, and, like, I get that, and I get that those things matter for legacy and respect, financially.
Also matters financially, man.
But there are a lot more financial incentives in Kyle Lowry's contract that pertain to the Raptors' success in the playoffs.
Oh, of course, of course. That's hilarious, too.
Yeah, he gets. Like,
I think they're called unlikely bonuses, which is just a general term.
Right.
But it's so funny to have like playoff bonuses for Lowry called unlikely.
Yeah, they're split into likely and unlikely based almost entirely on whether they happened the season before.
True.
So like, so there's also a weird loophole where you're not allowed to have incentives based on playing time or number of games played. Like you can't say Kyle Lowry gets an extra $100,000 if he plays 65 games, because there's obviously like a conflict of interest if he's at like 63 games late and they want to rest him and stuff like that. But you can put games played in as qualifiers for other things. So like Lowry might get a bonus for averaging this many assists if he plays this number of games, or even Lowry's 200K that everyone talked about for the All-Star game still hasn't triggered for sure because contingent upon him meeting some other criteria as well. So, a lot of these are built intelligently for guys to have, at least in the case of Lowry's, incentives. DeMar has, really small unlikely incentives, and I don't know what exactly they are. I'm guessing they're like all NBA first team, all NBA second team, that kind of stuff.
MVP, yeah.
But for Lowry, they're built pretty smartly where the incentive is like, there's a little bit of one for an All-Star and maybe some numbers and stuff, but it's really heavily built toward like, take the long view, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta stay healthy, exactly. And we gotta make a deep run, and you get all this money.
Yeah, but my general point was just like, you know,
I got you off of that story.
No, that's fine. It's fine. That's a good tangent. But I mean, you know, like it's nice to see that other players are capable, right? Like the fact that the Raptors can have more options consistently is great because we know Lowry and DeRozan is going to be there. They're going to supply you with like, I don't know, 45 points and they're going to give you something else with assists. But it's almost like it does feel a little bit like, you know, when the Dallas Mavericks won the championship, like Dirk is like DeMar in terms of like just a consistent number one scorer. They're going to give you points, but then like, you don't know who else is going to come in and give you points, but you know, someone's going to give you points every single night, right? Like, and I guess it's the same thing with the Detroit Pistons in 2004 that won the title as well. But that one is, there was just didn't have a number one scorer. There was just
and that one was so, like, I mean, the Raptors are top four defense right now too, but the Pistons,
but that was like a generationally good defense. Yeah. I mean, but you know what I mean? Like, going back to the Mavericks thing, like, it was like Jason Terry one night. It was like Sean Marion another night. It was like, you know, who else was on that team?
Jason Kidd?
Deshaun Stevenson, Jason Kidd. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
Deshaun Stevenson, Mr. 500.
Hey, listen, Mr. ATM, baby. How do ATMs work? I don't know. Shout out to the starters. But, yeah, seriously, like, it's nice to have that, it's nice to see that the Raptors have that depth in scoring, which is something that, you know, for a long time, the Raptors didn't have a third scorer, and it was, like, contingent on Jonas to make it there, and Jonas, you know, wasn't quite there with the timeline, but it feels good that he's, you know, come around, and hopefully this lasts, because the way he's playing of late in his role has been excellent. It's 24 minutes. It's go out there, give us as much energy as you can. He's getting like 15 rebounds, like 10, 12 rebounds in like 24 minutes, which is really hard to do. And he's finishing great around the rim. He's shooting well. He's even passing a little bit better and dribbling a little bit better. Like, you know,
it's
just everything's good right now.
Yeah, it's good. And to your point about like the scoring coming from different places, someone asked me in an early season mailbag, how many Raptors will score 20 points this year? And I went back and I looked, and I looked at, you know, recent Raptors teams, how many guys scored 20, and I kind of looked at, like, general, like, league spreads. Like, if you average, like, 8 points a game, how often are you going to hit 20 points and stuff like that? And I seriously underestimated the number of Raptors that are going to score 20 points this year.
So I think the number right now is 9, right? Every single rotation player outside of OG.
I think I said, what's that? No, OG's had a 20-pointer, hasn't he? Didn't he hit it when the one game he hit 6 threes?
Was that against Charlotte?
I think it's Pirtle that hasn't done it.
Pirtle hasn't had 20?
I think Pirtle topped out at like 18 or something like that.
Oh, okay.
I'm not positive.
It's hard to get 10 layups in a game. Let's be real.
Yeah.
You got to be really bad on defense to allow one player to have 10 layups.
Yeah, Pirtle topped out at 18 in that one Pacers game.
Okay.
So anyway, I underestimated it because usually teams aren't structured where five guys averaging 6 points a game will all have a turn going on for 20.
Yep. And, you know, like, at some point in, like, March, Norman Powell is going to be out there, and maybe they rest one of Lowry and DeRozan, and Norman Powell's going to have more of the offense, and he's come out of his funk a little bit, and maybe he'll have 20. He's definitely capable of having 20. He's done it before.
And it's not possible for Norman Powell to have less of the offense than he had on Sunday.
That is true. Although, you know what? I like that he's deferring a little bit more. Yeah. I like that I've seen him do a little in-between game. Like, he's had a floater. He had a floater in the Blazers series. He had a floater in the Charlotte game. I'm watching him very closely, all right? And these are only
he had a nice
shots.
Dump off the JV in the third quarter, too.
Yeah. I mean, he was doing that to start the year. He was really good at the driving kicks. He just wasn't, like, shooting well himself, and then he got injured.
Yeah.
And then he, like, lost all his confidence, but... You know, now he's starting to come back a little bit, and it's nice.
It was funny. I asked Norm if he's like going away for All-Star break or anything like that, and he's like, his answer was, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically it was like, no, I'm going to hang around here and work out. Yep.
That's how you get out of the slump. That's the right approach. I mean,
yeah, I
would
mean, with
take
all
a vacation
of these guys,
for your mental health, but
with all of these guys, I maybe take a break, because like none of these guys have played. Well, for Norm, he hasn't played much, but the rest of these guys have never played. Like, OG sprained an ankle today in his 55th game. He hadn't missed a game yet. That's more games than he played over two college seasons.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I wouldn't mind if the Raptors just, like, told him, hey, man, listen, just relax. Like, you don't got to play against Miami. Because, like, who are you guarding in Miami? Like, really? Like,
also,
do we need you?
Also, it's a back-to-back right before the break. If it's, like, just...
Yeah.
I'd extend it, you know? It's, like, I get that it's hard to do that. You don't want to rest guys if they're not actually hurt. And you don't want to take a rookie out of his flow or whatever, but like he hasn't been playing his best ball either. You know, even if it's not physical, maybe there's a little bit of a mental wall there. He says there isn't, but you know, I don't think it'd be the worst thing to. And they'll play it cautious. They play it cautious with everyone else. So
yeah, especially if you're trying to find an excuse for Norm to have some minutes. Like
yeah. Yeah, also, it might buy you. Like I know Norm will probably start in that scenario. More minutes of CJ with the starters, I would like a bigger sample on that, because I think that's still going to be a playoff lineup that they use sometimes.
That's true.
Anyway, I hope OG gets better soon, because
obviously
I don't want him, none of us want him dealing with anything. Just, you know, take your time.
Yeah, for sure. Two more things before we wrap up the first segment, and I'll let you go and I'll just do the questions. But, one.
I'm big time. I'm not doing reader questions, though.
No, you don't need that shit. You got to get your mail back in anyway. People are going to ask you about, like, you know, what's Bruno saying. You know, it's good that you no longer have to answer what Bruno's saying. But
yeah,
Bruno
sent me a goodbye DM the other day. So
that's really nice.
Bruno.
That's really nice. What do you say?
He just said thank you. I sent him one saying, like, good luck and, you know, see you down the line or whatever.
Honestly, that's so sweet. He did not send me or Harsh or Sahal any of these things.
Yeah.
Probably because we've been slandering him for like 2 years.
That's interesting. I wonder if he's ever. Yeah. Anyway, we did a whole Bruno podcast. I wish I could fast forward a couple years and see how it turns out.
Well, if we did fast forward a couple years from 2014, it would have been the same. So
yes.
Two more things. One, the buyout market. Are you interested in any of these guys? Like, do you want to do the Vince thing? We don't have to talk about the whole complicated history of Vince. It's just like, do you want any of these buyout guys?
Yeah. Regarding the Vince thing, the complicated part, read Dan Hackett's piece over at Raptors HQ. I think he did.
That's really good.
Yeah, I think he did a pretty good job wrapping up both sides of it and why the two sides can both be okay with Carter signing. I'm skeptical he's actually going to get bought out. He chose Sacramento for a reason. He's still, like, he was playing today, so they're clearly not doing the sit you down while we negotiate a buyout thing. Obviously, there's been contact between the sides, but I'm skeptical he actually gets bought out. He picked Sacramento for a reason. He wants to play regularly.
They paid him $8 million.
Yeah. If they were going to bring a guy in the buyout market, you know, he'd be high on the list just because I think adding another veteran wouldn't be the worst thing, like a guy who's been through it a little bit. Lowry and CJ Miles are the oldest guys on the team, and Serge Ibaka, like Lowry and DeRozan are veterans now by experience too, and Miles and Ibaka have playoff experience, but I don't think it hurts in a young locker room to add another guy. In terms of actual like quality of players, like I know people were lusty for Joe Johnson, Marco Bellinelli. Joe Johnson is not good anymore and shoots 27% on threes. Marco Bellinelli was the worst player by on-off stats by a significant margin on a very bad Atlanta Hawks team.
That's because he played no defense and only took hard shots. Yes. He made a lot of tough shots, but every time I watched them, it was like, what are you doing? And he made that shot.
Yeah, I love Bellinelli as an offensive piece off a bench in a vacuum. Sure. I'm not sure he would have played very much for the Raptors.
No.
Because they're kind of past the whole one-way player thing.
And also, like, you know, like, look at the Raptors, man. We have 11 players in the rotation currently. Like, Norman Powell's kind of there, so 10.5. Like, who else are we adding? And, like, and also, like, the buyout thing sounds sexy because you could talk yourself into a free player, whatever. But, like, more often than not, you end up with Jason Thompson.
Yeah, these guys are available for a reason. They're on bad teams, and no one wanted the trade for them.
Yeah. Like, sometimes it does work out. Like, don't get us wrong. Like, Joe Johnson with the Heat a couple years ago.
Yeah, that was huge.
Right? But also, like, we smacked Joe Johnson in the Heat. Patrick Patterson shut him the F down.
Yeah, and Joe Johnson's 2 years older now.
Yeah.
So I'm not sweating Joe Johnson. Is there anybody on your mind? I did think Bellinelli was a nice fit for the Sixers. The two names that stick out to me if Vince isn't coming, Ersan Ilyasova from the Hawks is a guy Raptors fans have wanted forever. He plays a tough style of game at the 4-5 spot, and he can shoot it a little bit. You know, he's not
a... By tough style game, you mean he flops it all the time?
Yeah, but he also, like... I don't know. He's aggressive.
He flops all the time.
Yeah, he's dirty, and I don't know. I don't think he would jump Siakam in the rotation or anything. But you know, if he jumps Bebe as your fifth big, obviously everyone knows I don't want Bebe to get jumped as the fifth big. But Bebe seems to want Bebe to get jumped as the fifth big the way it's looked the last couple games. So if he, I don't know, he's a guy who could contribute minutes in certain scenarios. And then the other one is, he would strictly be a specialist, and it doesn't sound like the Lakers are going to buy him out. But Channing Frye would be just an unbelievable culture fit for this team. And adding another veteran mentor in there, another guy with the experience, and then, you know, he is a shooting specialist, which probably wouldn't hurt to have just in reserve. But it doesn't sound like he's coming.
Yeah, I think Channing Frye probably wants to stay in Los Angeles and smoke weed with his old college roommate, Luke Walton.
Yeah, I told
him. Chances are pretty good. Chances are pretty good.
Jesse Mermis, if you're listening, though, tell Channing Frye I co-host this podcast with him if he comes.
Yo, listen, tell Channing Frye that the weed in Toronto is just as good as the weed in California.
Anyway, I don't think Frye's going anywhere. Ilyasova is maybe the one guy to take a look at. Personally, I would love Boris Diaw, who apparently has a buyout in his French contract, but I don't see that happening. What about you?
Also,
man?
Like,
it's so underwhelming to like look for like hunt for a 12th man. Does anyone excite you?
I kind of like think if there is a area to address, it is the leadership void, and I kind of would like the Raptors to have another badass like PJ Tucker was. So I kind of interested in Tony Allen for that reason.
Okay.
But, like, Tony Allen doesn't do much of anything other than defend, kind of.
Yeah. And so, I don't know if you want him taking minutes from – like, he'd be playing the exact Norman Powell role.
Yeah, and also – oh, yeah, you mean, like, the guy who misses layups on the wing?
yeah, and shoots 30% on threes? Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. It would depend on how his personality mixes with the group too. So I don't want him to like step on anybody's toes necessarily, but you know, just the way that PJ Tucker was able to, it was great because PJ was able to play and PJ's done great with Houston, whatever, but like just that kind of guy who's able to call out some other people, people can respect him. And like Tony Allen's a respectable guy.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like he's tough. He's had all teams versus more defense. He's had playoff experience. He's not going to back down for anybody. Like I wouldn't mind that.
And I think the Raptors, like Raptors fans can be rest pretty assured that if Ujiri brings someone in, it's going to be a culture fit. They're not risking this culture that they have right now.
Yeah, for sure.
They're not, you know, and that was a case where, you know, I don't know Joe Johnson personally, but like, who knows if he's going to fit? Who knows if anyone's going to fit, really? You know, Channing Frye and Vince Carter are guys that have enough tape on them as character guys that you could be pretty certain. But you never know how guys are going to respond to not playing, too.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I don't know, though, man. There's an open locker spot.
That is true. Yeah,
there's an open locker spot. So.
Yeah.
What was the other thing? You said we had one more thing to talk about before.
Oh, yeah. Very quickly, the Raptors play two games next week at home on against the Miami Heat, and then on the next night, back-to-back in Chicago. I don't know. The Heat, they have Dwayne Wade now, so that'd be a win. We should rectify the last game and get the win.
We had
Larry for the last, and we lost at the buzzer.
Yeah, I think the Raptors will be kind of hungry to win that one. They haven't lost at home very much at all, so to lose to the same team in the Air Canada Center twice in a row seems pretty unlikely to me.
Also, the race for 60 is a real thing, man. The Raptors got to go 21-6, which doesn't seem that ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's how they've been winning currently. So
honestly, I think a lot of it comes down to what the Celtics do, because like if the Raptors are in the clear for the one seed, I think they're going to rest guys a little bit more aggressively. Sure. And then if the one seed, because like obviously the long view and the how everyone is in the playoffs should be the number one focus, but like the way the Cavs looked today and look on paper, like the one seed's gonna be pretty valuable.
That's true.
So if then, they're in a hunt for a one seed, I think 60 wins is probably on the table. Otherwise, I think there's almost no chance they don't at least break their own record for the best record in team history, which was 56 wins.
True. I mean, this team is better than that team, for sure.
Yeah.
And then the Chicago Bulls should be a win. Easy. The Bulls curse is no longer, man. I don't care about no Zach LaVine or anything like that. We're winning that game.
Yeah, I don't care about the Bulls.
Yeah,
who they got?
All right. They got nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody.
They got Pau Gzipsa, or however Herbie Kuhn says it. Man.
Herbie's got to rely on something. Herbie, just go home and like read like a foreign book or something and like excite yourself and then just calm yourself and then go to the game and then say Schroeder instead of Schroeder.
I'm glad Herbie's feeling better though. He missed three games in a row. Sick.
Ah, shit. Okay.
Yeah. And Herbie's announcing when Vince steps in to a game for the first time is going to be huge.
All right, Blake. Thanks for doing this.
All right, buddy.
Thanks to Blake for coming on for the first segment. In the second segment, I will take your Twitter questions.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers, and you know what makes me mad? When insurance companies deny your claim for no good reason. That's why people call me. I'm the lawyer insurance companies don't want to deal with. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you.
Okay, welcome back to the second half of the show. I'm taking your Twitter questions. As always, hit me up on Twitter, at Raptors Republic. We will try to get to all your questions, and we'll start with Woodley, Sean Woodley, our guy. Can you rank the Celtics roster by unlikability? Okay, all right. We didn't get enough Celtics slander in the first half, so let's double down on this. Let me just pull up the Celtics roster real quick. All right, so the most unlikable Celtic has to be Al Horford for what he did to TJ Ford. Quite frankly, I don't respect this man. He keeps tearing his pec. He is considered one of the best bigs in the league, but he's averaging a solid 13 points. Like, if you saw the stat line of 13 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, and a block, you would think that's, what, Nick Batum before the injuries? But instead, this is a max contract player, earning $30 million, and he routinely gets sunned by Tristan Thompson. So he's probably the most unlikable one. Aaron Baines is a close second. Aaron Baines would be up there if he played more minutes, but Baines is pretty much just in the game to injure players, and, you know, he's not actually that great at like, what's good about basketball, Aaron Baines is there to ruin it. So he's not great. Marcus Smart has to be third for all the flops. I actually kind of respect Marcus Smart for hustling his way into becoming a good player. Despite the fact that he can't shoot a basketball at all. I mean, like, why can't you shoot 40% from the field? Like, what's wrong with you? But, honestly, like, I feel bad for him. He's got acne. He looks like, you know, Bulbasaur. But seriously, the flops are kind of ridiculous. So he gets the third spot. Terry Rozier is very similar to Marcus Smart. He's got the same spunkiness, got the same shooting percentage, and tries really, really hard with long arms, and he gets a lot of garbage stats. But Rozier's been balling of late, so I'll give him that. But yeah, also it's really funny that, you know, he's Danny Ainge's untouchable player. We're talking about a player that averages 10 points on 39% shooting. In terms of the fifth, I'm not a big fan of Daniel Theis. I think you look like Macklemore. I think you wear a t-shirt in basketball, and I don't know why you're so self-conscious about it. You know, like, you know, Chuck Hayes played in the league. Like, a lot of players played in the league and weren't fully, you know, didn't have great upper bodies, but, like, come on, dude, don't wear a t-shirt. It's a bad look. And then from there, like, the rest of them are fine. Like, I like Kyrie. I do. Like, he plays stylistically an excellent basketball player. You know, whatever. He gets fake deep on Instagram, but, like, if you know any 25-year-olds, that's not uncommon at all. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, I don't mind them. Tatum is a little bit overhyped, so he's kind of annoying, but he's not doing anything wrong himself. And then Jaylen Brown just seems like a cool dude overall. Both of them are Jeff Green, but whatever. Marcus Morris, I respect the Morai twins. I do. I kind of wanted the Raptors to get Mark Heathie a couple years ago. Doesn't look so good nowadays, but you know, I'd rather have Ibaka. Although, given the contracts, it's pretty close. And then the rest of the roster is like, whatever, man. Greg Monroe, Shane Larkin, Abdel Nader, Semi Ojeleye, Gordon Hayward. Actually, I don't really like Gordon Hayward. I'm gonna put Gordon Hayward as the fifth guy I don't like. Cause, like, what are we really doing with Gordon Hayward? Like, he's nice, but, like, why are we making him not to be the superstar? Like, this guy averaged, like, 20 points per game twice in his career. He's been an all-star one time. He's not that good defensively. He's not that good offensively. He's just good. He's a solid number two guy. But, we go too far with it. And the rest of them I don't really care about. So, there you go, Woodley. That's your rankings. All right, next one comes from Alexander. How can you say Casey is a good coach when he's leaving so many points on the table by not calling a JB3 every possession? Obviously, that's a joke. But the JB thing for three is... It's hard to believe in it, but at the same time, you gotta be intrigued, man. You really gotta be intrigued, cause the shots look good. They really do. I mean, everyone looks good if you're not covered, but, that's just another feather in Dwayne Casey's cap, man. Like, to see JV come up like that, I know that's been one of the biggest criticisms of Dwayne Casey, and the people who have been most critical about Dwayne has been the Hive. Like, they've really, you know, if you believe that JV is, this, like, incredible player that's being underutilized, then naturally you would go to the player, you would go to the figure that's been controlling his minutes. And so there's been a lot of critique of Dwayne Casey, and some of it's legitimate, some of it's not. But, to see the way JV has sort of blossomed, even in his role, I even think even the Hive has to be happy about how Dwayne Casey's gone, you know? So, kudos to Casey, man. And kudos to JV, too, for improving. You know, like, improving is also, is very much on the players as much as it's on the coach. Yeah, JV adding the range to his game, working all the time. It's been great. Next one from Ephes Pitch. Do the Raptors actually have to shorten the bench in the playoffs if the bench can roll the other team's starters? Blake and I talked about this in the first half. I don't think so. No, I think you probably limit the number of minutes. The only my main concern with the bench in the playoffs is like how few of them can shoot. Like if you take away CJ's shots and if you are a little bit more disciplined on offense, such that you're not giving up so many transition opportunities, the bench can be solved and creating shots can be a little bit difficult. So you might need to sprinkle in some Kyle Lowry minutes in there. And I'm not necessarily sure who you take out because. I think if shooting is a premium, then you might have to take out DeLon, but also, you know, it might get into a size issue with Kyle and Fred VanVleet. Like, everything about the playoffs is, like, adjustments. It's about the opponent specifically in front of you and what they have. And, you know, if you're talking about a team like Philly, they like to go mix their starters with their bench all the time. So it might be difficult if, like, say, Joel Embiid is out there with the starters. Against the bench. That's one of the issues I've had with Dwayne Casey, as much as praise as I've given him this podcast, like in the playoffs. He doesn't necessarily play situations so much as he plays his rotations, and then he makes game adjustments between games instead of within games. And I would like to see that because the Raptors have one of the most predictable rotations, which, you know, works, has both positives and minuses. And, you know, it's not for every single situation. In the playoffs, I think it's a little bit easy to anticipate what the Raptors are going to do. And for teams to adjust, but at the same time, the like I said in the first half of the pod, you know, that second unit has been so dynamic and been so key to what the Raptors do. I don't think they want to change it, and I think that's what Masai and Bobby Webster have been saying, so I have no reason not to believe them there. Next one from Darth Lean, what have been the three keys to the Raptors' bench success, and how do you think the bench prowess will translate come playoffs? In terms of the three keys, I think one, it's like a sort of a collective knowledge in the sense that like everyone knows what they're supposed to be doing. Everyone knows what each other's tendencies are. And so they're able to think ahead of time. It's almost like what the Spurs do most of the time, every single season. Whereas like everyone is so well drilled. So I think that's that's the biggest one. The second one is the fact that they're like very young and very athletic, and very long. And none of them are gamblers. In terms of defense, maybe DeLon Wright gambles probably the most, but he's also like he's also so quick and so rangy and he's so good at getting deflections that like it's fine that he gambles. I guess Siakam a little bit too, but it's the same sort of principle applies with Siakam. But the fact that they're just so athletic, really does help them on every aspect because, you know, on offense, like their transition offense is crazy, especially with Siakam running the floor. And also defensively, they're able to swarm, they're able to pressure, they're able to rotate and, you know, they're able to strike a balance between physical aggression and also, you know, restraint. And that's hard to do for a lot of young players. And then in terms of the third key to success, I think they just, like, generally all like each other a lot. Like, everyone roots for each other. There's no agendas whatsoever. There's no distinct hierarchy. It's not like one player doesn't trust the other player. Everyone trusts everybody. Everyone passes everybody. Everyone's willing to make the play for the next player. And, That's good to see. I mean, like, yes, they prioritize CJ Miles, but, like, there's a reason for that. You know what I mean? So, the bench has, there's a lot of reasons why the bench do well. Next one's from Ben Scott. What are the warning signs for being in JV Hive? Honestly, at this point, JV's playing so well, we should all be in the Hive. We'll just say that much. But, generally speaking, if you find yourself hating DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry and Dwayne Casey, you probably are in the Hive. Next one from Cam O'Brien. If the Raptors come out of the East, do you think they would have a chance to go up against a team like Houston or Golden State? I don't think Houston's making it to the finals. And if they are, I think the Raptors can do fine against Houston. They're getting crushed by Golden State. It's not close. But I don't think the Raptors are going to the finals. As much enthusiasm as everyone is having, stuff like that. Like, in the playoffs... Okay, let me just, if you find yourself really excited about the Raptors going to the finals, I'm right there with you. I support you. But at the same time, I would like to ask you this question. When LeBron has shooters around him and he slows the game down and he is playing high pick and roll and he's driving towards the basket, what are you doing as the Raptors to do anything against that? Because there's no answer to that. There just isn't. Even the Warriors don't really have answers to that. And you must beat them on offense to do that. And when you look at the Raptors' weapons and you look at the Cavaliers' weapons, yeah, it's not there, bro. It's not there. I'm sorry. I'm just saying. It's just not really there. It's not there. Next one from Angel. I don't really know. Yeah, Angel. Let's just say Angel. Playoffs-wise, what do you value the most? A good bench or your three best guys? Your three best guys. Yeah. A bench is good if you can sort of mix and match parts, but the Raptors' bench kind of works as a singular entity. If you break them up, sometimes it works, but a lot of times it doesn't. And so if I do have a good bench, I value like pieces that I can plug and play with different, you know what I mean? Like I'm thinking like with the Spurs, right? Like they used to be able to like move pieces in and out, such that, you know, you can get a couple minutes for Patty Mills in these spot minutes. You can have a couple minutes for Manu, who can play with anybody. You can have some minutes with, Boris Diaw coming in for Thiago Splitter and going to a smaller lineup. Like, you know, like if your bench is interchangeable and plays well with the starters, then that's cool. That's not really necessarily the case with the Raptors here, so I value the three best guys. Like, I need to see Lowry, DeRozan, and Ibaka do well in their roles. Next one from Global Nation. Why do we even give an F about what the media in the States says slash does? They're totally irrelevant to us. Jalen Rose and Paul Pierce ain't lacing up in May and June, let alone the rest of the peanut gallery. We are effing balling. Let's keep it up and get better. Look, it doesn't really matter what they're saying. Obviously, it'd be nice. The thing is this, okay? Your perception becomes your reality, especially since people don't necessarily care about reality as much as they do perception. So what I'm talking about is like, let's say you're a buyout candidate right now, right? If nobody's talking about the Raptors, if nobody talks about Dwayne Casey the way, you know, Brad Stevens gets credit for breathing, shout out to Sahal for that one, like, nobody thinks about that, and that thought doesn't come to your mind organically just because, like, it has to be put there. I don't want to sound like Inception or some shit, but like someone actually has to conceptualize this, put it out in the public, and for people to actually buy that shit. If nobody's selling anything about the Raptors, and you just expect everyone to look at the standings and take an objective look and like look through every single one of them, that's not the case, bro. Like people care about what people say about them, especially these athletes, especially the ones that you want to lure to your destination. As much as the Raptors organization has done great things right now, it's a great attractive program. You know, you're seeing the top bio candidates just land in other places. Why? Because they get hype, man. They get hype. People don't just play the sport to win the sport to make money. They also play the sport to be famous in the thing that they're doing. And you cannot be famous if nobody talks about you. Like, nobody cares about Pascal Siakam because, like, you know, it's not because Siakam's not a good player. It's not because he hasn't done great things this year. It's because nobody's talked about them. But you will see all sorts of hype about Terry Rozier. You'll see, like, what, like, you know what I mean? Like, with the Cavs, like, you know every single player on the Cavs because the Cavs are being talked about every single day. And, like, a lot of players seek that. So it does matter. It really does matter. And it matters in terms of, you know, because it's an entertainment business as well. Like, if you're not in the news, you're not really entertaining anybody. It's a public spectacle. So if nobody talks about you, it really does matter. And if you are a Raptors fan, you can be rightfully pissed that nobody talks about the Raptors. None of the rating stuff matters. Like, you're never on TV. You're never on, you know, you're never on national TV. You're never being talked about in these shows, like, whatever, right? And nobody really rates you. Like, that becomes your reality over time. It really does. And when it comes down to moments that matter, nobody thinks about the Raptors. That's just, and there's a reason for that. So, yes, it does matter. Even though it is ultimately, it should be inconsequential. What should and what is two different things. Next one from my guy, Marcelo Menezes. This is the team, is that in Portuguese? I'm gonna have to translate that to Portuguese. Hold up. I don't understand what this question means. Marcelo, please ask me again in English. I am not good in Portuguese. I just know how to swear. Shout out to my guy, Savetta, for teaching me that. Next one from Amin. Pound the rock is still a thing. Yeah. Pound the rock is a mentality, baby. It means go to work hard every single day. The Pound the Rock story sounds a lot like this Chinese parable about this family moving a mountain over generations. Chinese people on the pod, they know what I'm talking about on that one. Next one from Sandeep. Is it practical for the Raptors to keep both Fred and DeLon? If not, who would you choose to keep? I honestly just don't necessarily see the reason why Raptors fans do this to themselves. Like, they just arbitrarily create a difficult situation and then they make themselves be miserable. I would like to keep both of them. But in terms of who you keep, I feel like DeLon has more trade value and they're about approximate players at the moment. DeLon's better, but Fred has also come out really strong with a 3-point shooter. I don't know, man. In that case, if they're giving you equal value and one player has more trade value than the other, you probably want to keep Fred and maybe move DeLon. But I don't want to see that happen, man. I like them as Raptors. I like to keep them both. Why did you make me choose Sandeep? Next one from Jake. Do we need a bio candidate? Do we actually need a locker room presence? No, we don't need anything, man. We're tops in the East. We don't need anything at the moment. But it's nice to have depth, man. It really is. Like, adversity is going to hit at some point, right? And, like, if an injury happens, if something happens, if a player randomly goes cold, like, just have options. It's not a bad thing to have. I wouldn't mind. Like you said, I wouldn't mind having Tony Allen in this locker room. Next one from Hoot and Chooch. Is Philly the best 8 seed the East has had in several years? Yes, because the Philadelphia 76ers should really be a 4 seed if Embiid plays all the time, but he doesn't, and so they're arbitrarily held down. Their quality is way better than what they are on a night-to-night basis. Basically, they're trash if Embiid doesn't play, and they're really good if the Embiid does play, and that's artificially deflating their value. But yeah, I don't want to see Philly in the first round, although it's not ultimately that bad. Like, you can kind of solve Embiid a little bit, and then but ultimately he's a superstar, he's a force of nature. Like, you're not really going to stop him fully, but the rest of that team you can kind of stop. I'm not too worried about the rest of that team. But yeah, they're solid, and they're definitely not an 8 seed. They're just only that because of circumstance. Next one from Chris. What's the maximum number of minutes the bench mob could play together in a playoff game? I don't know. What do you mean? 48? Like, what do you mean? I don't really understand that question. Like, what's the most viable minutes? How am I supposed to know that? Like, how am I supposed to know that now? Like, months from the playoffs. Like, they could start to slow down and stuff like that. We don't know, man. So, I don't really know how to answer that question. Another one from Mark. It's a different Mark, I guess. Go ahead and ask the question on everyone's mind. Which Raptor could slash should be in the Winter Olympics and in which event? I think Pirtle and Siakam have great chemistry and I would love to see them figure skate together. They're both pretty nimble. Siakam's lighter, so he probably has to, like, you know, be lifted up and do all those acrobatics. But yeah, that would be nice, right? Like, the two of them, like, they got outstanding chemistry, you know, like, yeah, that's probably the one. And then, I don't know, I could probably see Fred being a sick snowboarder. I don't really know what event he'd be doing, but, like, he's got that low center of gravity, he's got great balance, he's very strong, and he's got that tough mindset, you know? So, yeah, those are the two. Those are the two. I'm not watching much Winter Olympics, I'm not gonna lie to you. That's, much prefer summer, because the Chinese people are way better in summer. Next one from 40 and Dunking. More likely to go on an 8-game losing streak before the end of the season, Celtics or Heat? I don't really see the Celtics going on an 8-game losing streak. The Heat are definitely more liable to go on an 8-game losing streak. I could see a situation where the Heat doesn't, like, the whole situation falls apart, but they're actually kind of similar teams if you really look at it. It's just like two coaches are kind of propping up the otherwise, you know, not great talent. But yeah, I mean, the Heat, I mean, they just can't score. They defend like hell, and we all know that, but, like, they just can't score. It's a real issue for them. And then last one from Elias. Good question. If the current system works, the Raptors should roll with it. He's asking. Oh, that's a response. Well, there's no more questions. That does it for the podcast then, I guess. Thank you to all of you guys for listening. Thanks to Blake for coming on the pod, and we'll be back next week.
Still paying hundreds of dollars for prescription glasses? Let's change that. At Zenni.com, our factory direct model means no middlemen or outrageous markups. Just the same quality frames and lens options as the other guys for one-tenth the price. Zenni offers prescription glasses starting at $695, as well as affordable sunglasses, blue blockers, and more. The best part? Try any frame, anywhere, with our 3D virtual try-on. Visit Zenni.com today and change the way you buy glasses forever.